Well, good Monday afternoon, Saskatchewan. Jamie and Locker with you here on the Green Zone.
They made me work today. I couldn't believe it. I was like, do I get an IOU for the haul I did on Friday night?
No.
Back to work.
Anyways, here I am.
You didn't even ask.
That's because Murray's off. Nobody to ask.
You wouldn't have asked. It's not in your nature. You would have been here anyway.
Yeah, and plus, I don't really like leaving you alone.
It's not a good idea. If we're being honest.
Locker needs adult supervision.
Look at that, you figured me out.
Now, the starting lineup.
Each and every day, we begin the Green Zone with the starting lineup, the top sports headlines. And after an 18-hour delay, the ball did get kicked off between the Riders and the Stampeders. Unfortunately for the Riders, that game did go ahead.
Four receivers to the left, pressure coming from the right. Harris in trouble, he's hammered. The ball is out, and the Calgary Stampeders defense has done it again. A heavy pop on the Riders quarterback.
Yeah, that was about the night for Trevor Harris, as Vernon Adams Jr. went for over 400 yards. Harris did end up with over 400 yards passing, but as he described it after the game, that was yards after blowout, I think it was. So, yeah, all the he even understands.
Third and fourth quarter, they were able to move the ball. They just weren't able to convert, right?
So
frustrating game.
The Riders lose their first of the season. The Calgary Stampeders beat the Bombers and the Riders in back-to-back weeks, as I think they can stake claim to being the best team right now in the Canadian Football League, as the Riders will have to shake that one off. They start practice tomorrow to get ready for the BC Lions.
It could be worse. You could be an Elks fan.
They'll dump it off. Couture turns, trying to stay on his feet, and he does. Couture towards the end zone, and he's in! Touchdown, Lions! Javon Couture, a 16-yarder!
Lions 32, Elks 14. For some reason, the Elks and Lions have played twice this year, and the Elks have lost both of those games. Edmonton is 4-1 on the season, so I'll take 4-1. Rourke looked pretty good. 26 of 30 passes, 345 yards, 3 TDs, no interceptions. We will chat with about Elks with Matty Iwanek from Edmonton Sports Talk at about 3:35-ish today. So we'll get his sense of how the fan base is feeling as the numbers walking into Commonwealth week to week continue to decline.
Why would you go? Why would you go? That might be the worst defense we have seen in a while. They sucked yesterday, did the Elks.
That was a bad game.
They're on a bye week. The Elks.
O'Rourke looked really good, man.
O'Rourke looked good, getting ready for the Riders. But the Elks go on a bye week. Their next game will be in Regina against the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. As we turn our attention to Major League Baseball, wasn't a great weekend for the Toronto Blue Jays.
Calling the field stands, it is a foul ball.
John Schneider out of the dugout. He is upset right now. Oh, and he's going all the way out to Brian Walsh, who made the foul call down the line. And there are three umps also in the way. Walsh has backed up and moved away from John Schneider.
I love how they play hot-blooded, by the way. Full credit
hot-blooded
to the DJ outside of Sacramento, California, where the Athletics are playing this season. John Schneider, because when you get ejected in that park, you have to go all the way to the outfield. So on his way out, he signaled the ball fair as he left the back of the outfield. It was quite hilarious. But the next pitch.
And he hits it high in the air. Left center field and deep. Back to the wall. This one's fair for sure.
The next pitch. Boom. Out of the park. Jays get the home run anyways. However, they drop both games Saturday and Sunday to the Athletics. But they're still two games up on the Yankees as we head into the All-Star festivities.
And if you're a Jays fan, you're watching for Vladdy and Kirk in the All-Star game, the Home Run Derby tonight.
Josh Hamilton of the Texas Rangers has 50,000-plus New Yorkers chanting his name! Gone again! Wait a minute! 500 feet. That last one was 504.
Start time tonight, 6 o'clock for the Home Run Derby. Always fun to watch, although this year a lot of like very unfamiliar names, if we're being honest. James Wood from the Nationals, Brett Rooker from the Athletics, Junior Caminero.
Nailed it.
Did I get it?
I'm proud of you.
From the Rays. Cruz from the Pirates. Buxton from the Twins. You got Rally. His dad's throwing to him.
Yeah, his dad's
we just looked at
university coach, so he's got his dad through. He leads the league in home runs with 38. The Mariners.
The funny thing too is he's got 38, and then the next closest to him on the list in the home run derby is James Wood at 24. So kind of a weak class. Matt Olson, we won't leave him out of the mix. 17 home runs this year, Braves, and a Jazz Chisholm Jr. for the Yankees with 17 home runs. By the way, that's my money line. Put some money down on Jazz.
I know you're such a big bettor too, Locker.
I don't bet. Yeah, I don't gamble, but can you even gamble on the home run? Of course you can.
Yes, you can.
You kidding me?
You know there are no stupid questions. You might have just found one. Can you make a bet on pro sports? I told you today.
I'm sorry.
I Googled home run derby, and the first five stories
were all about betting.
I just don't bet.
I never bet on anything. So anyway, so there you go. That's put your money on Jazz.
If you're wondering what the format is this year, the eight players will all hit. The top four will move on. They'll split them into two semifinals.
Yeah.
Then they'll hit again to decide the two into the final. And
are they trying to speed it up or something?
Yes, there's now a clock. You have to 40 pitches or I think 4 minutes, and then it's down to like 2 minutes and 27 pitches. There's no more outs anymore. Like it used to be like three outs and you're done. Then one guy would get one home run. Now it's just 27 balls or 2 minutes. Go and see how many you can crush.
I don't mind that. Why do guys are they staying away from it?
Some believe it messes up their swing, like they just mentally get into a bad habit, because there's some been analytics, you know, baseball analytics, that after an All-Star break, home run hitters drop in production for a little bit until they get their groove back. But we're seeing a lot more avoid it times. But,
yeah.
Well, we have the league leader in home runs, Cal Raleigh of the Mariners, hitting him out of the park tonight. And meanwhile, Wimbledon was settled over the weekend as Yannick Sinner gets his first title.
That's it. Yannick Sinner takes his piece of Wimbledon history. What a wonderful match.
Yannick Sinner beats Carlos Alcaraz, revenge from Alcaraz's comeback win at the French Open. It's Sinner's fourth Grand Slam title, the first Italian to win it. As for the women's final,
Grand Slam match, Schwerter, 6-love.
Iga conquers the grass and becomes a Wimbledon champion.
Swiatek took care of business in under an hour, 6-love, 6-love, the first double donut since like 1911. By the way, I looked this up because I was curious. Sinner and Alcaraz in the last two seasons have won every single Grand Slam. So Aussie, French, Wimbledon, U.S. Open. This year, it was split between Sinner and Alcaraz last year. This year, Aussie, French, Wimbledon, those three again. If one of them wins the U.S. Open, it'll only be the second time in the history of tennis two players have won all the Grand Slams in a two-year period. The last two to do it was Roger Federer and Rafa Nadal. Nadal won the two French Opens, and Roger won everything else.
Yeah.
So that it's rare of these two guys being as dominant as they have in men's tennis.
And I don't know if you're following tennis right now. I very casually follow it, but these two, whenever they're on the court together, they're both Very exciting players to watch.
It was the first time Sinner's been able to beat Alcaraz in a Grand Slam for his first Wimbledon title. Coming up, we talk about what happened Friday night with the Riders and the Calgary Stampeders. Were you at the stadium? What did you think of the delay and the decision to push Friday's game to 2 o'clock on Saturday? Let us know on the text line, 1-877-332-8255. This is 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. That might have been one of the greatest music pulls in producer Scott's career on a little Nickelback, What Are You Waiting For? As the Riders and the Calgary Stampeders had you waiting on Friday night, didn't they? Locker, you were there.
I was there. I got there around 7, and when they made the final call at 10, we kind of
when they said we're going to wait until 10:45 and for 11:15 kickoff, and I think everybody who knows anything about weather went, they're not playing. Are you serious?
Well, I thought there was an outside. You know what? We just got a text from Kirk, and he had an interesting take on it. He said he was hoping for an 11:15 kickoff and a 2 a.m. wrap up because it would have been like one of the more unique games in the history of the CFL.
Which is
really kind of cool.
Yeah, that's all well and good, but they wouldn't have. The air quality didn't start clearing up until Saturday morning. I think woke up at like 7 a.m. and it was still at an 8.
Yeah, it was the wrong call. They should have called it, but I like his sort of approach to it because
it would have been CFL lore, right?
Yeah, that would have been really cool.
They could have made t-shirts. I was there.
I was at the Smoke game. Yeah, it is unfortunate, but I think last night also, our Friday night was also the start of, you know, deciding what they need to do in those situations, right?
That's what baffled me.
They didn't have a plan going in.
There was no policy. There's no policy in place because the CFL.ca/weather, you can go to it, and they have every policy written down, but it's only for games that are delayed during
the game. Yeah.
There's no policy in place, or at least not yet, on if the ball is never kicked off,
what do we do?
What do you do? Mm-hmm. And everybody we talked to said, yeah, we were just going to wait. Craig Reynolds was asked that question about a lack of a policy.
Correct. Yeah, absolutely. So that's really to protect the players once they've warmed up, once they've started playing, to prevent long delays and obviously the issues it does for their bodies. So if you've not warmed up, which tonight we didn't, and we didn't start, the activity, if you will, you can delay as long as you need to. And so, and we had that discussion. We had that discussion on would we delay and would we play this game? Would we kick it off at midnight if it's clear, right? But we just opted to say, no, that wasn't the right decision tonight.
That's the case. They could have just crossed their fingers and hoped the wind started to blow the smoke out.
And it could have. Like, that's a possibility. You can't control the weather, right? It is odd that they didn't have a policy, and I'm hoping that they change it because I think there should be something in place where if the ball doesn't get in the air by a certain amount of time, that's it. You pull the pin. You don't sit around and wait for something to change. And there was a lot of conversation in the stands when we were there on the Friday about this 3-hour window, and everybody was sort of mixing up that rule on weather delays with the, you know, with the smoke rule. But I guess, you know, in hindsight, anyway, because everyone thought, oh, well, though,
it's 10 o'clock. That's the deadline.
They're calling it.
And I'm starting to think, should that just be the deadline? We will not start a game.
If you don't get it going by 10 o'clock, if the skies don't clear,
or 11,
smoke,
whatever, pick a time, but there should be a protocol.
Yeah.
With the discussion of the CFL Players Association, like these players were around and not eating.
Yeah.
And all that. I mean, you're going to have them go till 2 a.m.?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if that's really sound player safety protocol, but that's going to have to be a conversation with the CFLPA.
Yep.
Coming up, I did chat with the commissioner over the weekend about the goings-on from Friday night. Well, a good Monday afternoon, Saskatchewan. Speaking of air quality, if the Riders were to play in Saskatoon today, they wouldn't be playing football at all. Saskatoon is under a smoke cloud as we speak and has been for all day. The southern half has been in rain all day, so the air quality's been okay.
I'm no weather expert, but one of the thoughts that I had was on Friday, because they were making assumptions on what was happening in and around Regina, right? Moose Jaw, it was at this point, the smoke levels.
Yep.
And then at a certain point, it blew, and that weather system's moving here. But I'm wondering, if you get, you know, 30,000 people in their cars, you know, breathing and all in sort of one spot, can you impact, can it be a microcosm of the forecast and keep sort of a bubble over that area?
Are you saying everybody should have just got out a fan and started waving the fans?
I'm
we
wondering.
Should have started the wave at Mosaic Stadium to get the air moving around.
And again, I'm no weather expert. I am no scientist, but I'm wondering if that collection of people and that heat.
We kept on getting texts from people saying they should send some helicopters over the stadium and get it. Like, okay, that might work for a minute, and then it's...
We sat there for 3 hours in that smoke, and I kept checking the phone to see the, you know, from the CFL webpage, the weather page, yeah. There's the smoke page, and it was not moving. It was stuck. It was just
there. It was declining. All afternoon, it was going down, 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 and then it got to like a
9.5.
And then... And I was looking at Moose Jaw, too. Moose Jaw went from like a 13
to like a 4.
In 45 minutes.
Yeah,
it was
boom.
And then we got a text during the pregame show going, I'm not sure, guys. The wind's died, and I'm driving in from Moose Jaw. You can literally see a wall of smoke.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, you're driving into the smoke.
There was a dome over top of the dome,
yeah.
Right? Like, anyway.
Unfortunately, it was a smoke dome. But, yeah. I was able to chat with the commissioner over the weekend about what happened and the lessons learned. As here's my chat with Commissioner of the CFL, Stuart Johnston.
Well, we were venturing into unknown territory. We have policies. Unfortunately, we've had to put policies in place because wildfire and wildfire smoke has become a little more commonplace than I think any of us would like. And maybe I should start by wishing all the folks that are directly impacted by the wildfires all of our best as they look to save homes and relocate and deal with some devastation. I mean, really, what we experienced is nothing compared to that. But in terms of football, yes, it was quite a situation. We knew as of Thursday there could be an issue. Friday, we monitored all day. We got to the point where we thought, you know, there might be a delay, but you know, every stadium is equipped with real-time air quality sensors. We developed a policy in place that says players, you know, can't play if it's at an 8 or above, and it was hovering above that. But we have incredible meteorologists and some of the best in the country right there in Regina. And we were just monitoring wind patterns, seeing what was happening in Moose Jaw, and trying to extrapolate where that would land, and at the same time manage an incredibly patient fan base that was in the stadium. So it was a lot going on at once, for sure.
Was there no policy about a rescheduling? Like, there's a lot of policies about if there's a delay during a game, it can only go 3 hours, it can only do this. Is it play it by ear if there's no kickoff, Stu?
We did not have a policy in place if the game never started. So that is something we are going to look at. I got to stress, for a lot of stakeholders, there's tons of collaboration. You know, we developed this policy that we do have in conjunction with the CFLPA. And from the player standpoint, the clubs, their coaching staff, the Calgary, the visiting team, the broadcaster, the league, the fans, security, we want to get that game played. It is an incredible lift to postpone a game and take all of the logistics and move it to another day, even if it is 18 hours later. And so all of us, I think everyone involved, wanted to get that game played. And so we were giving as much time as we could, and then finally just had to say this isn't going to change, and we've got to go to Plan B.
Stuart Johnston, the commissioner of the Canadian Football League, here on the Green Zone. There was about a 2-hour gap, Stu, where there was an announcement, or closer to that 7:45-ish or 7:30, about a half an hour, and then nothing until 9:30, 9:45, until that 10:45 deadline. Why was that gap? Why not any communication for those 2 hours?
I'll just come back and say, we've got to make sure we're communicating often and as transparently as possible. Now, does that mean we update every 10 minutes with no change? No, I don't think that makes sense. But I would, and did, we talked about erring on the side of over-communicating. Now, I'm going to say that we've lots of learning. I'm very proud of all the stakeholders, the league, the clubs, the players, the fans. I mean, really everyone did their best to try and manage this, and the broadcaster. But one thing I think we as a league could do better is make sure we are communicating at the right cadence. But even more importantly, I think, is specifics and detail within those communications. I think we were talking too much in generalities. I think we should have said, hey, as a reminder, the air quality index has to be at 7 or below. It's currently at 10. The winds are blowing at 5 kilometers an hour. This would lead us to believe that within an hour, we should be okay. I mean, that's not exactly what happened, but you know what? I'm just giving an example. I think it would have been much more informative for the fans had we delivered that type of message, so they knew exactly what we were looking at. I would go as far as saying, hey, we were looking at moose jaw. All our meteorologists said the moose jaw situation should extrapolate here to Regina, and that's why we're looking at an hour delay, and we think it'll happen. And then when the winds just died, we should have said specifically the winds went from X kilometers an hour to Y. So I think that was definitely a learning experience for us.
When you talk about a policy, I'm just curious, behind the scenes logistically, I imagine in that span, you needed to find accommodation for the Stampeders, security. How much was going on behind the scenes the fans may not even be considering on what led from 7:30? It looks like we're good to go to, hey, there's a drop dead time, and then all of a sudden, of course, it's a 2 o'clock kickoff.
An incredible amount began, I think, once we missed that hour delay. And then we were, I think as we were incredibly focused on how do we get the game in, you start to prepare for where can we go if it doesn't. And that's, talking to the broadcaster, certainly talking to the visiting team, figuring out the fans, figuring out the logistics of security. And that, all those things you just referenced, are why we want to get a game played on the day it's scheduled to be played. It's just so logistically difficult to move a game for all of those moving parts. These are the things that you all have to take into account, but I would say probably it was happening simultaneously as we were trying to get that game played.
What's the main takeaway, Stuart, from a CFL head office and even team perspective with the Riders and the Stampeders?
I think that we're going to review with our management council, which includes the presidents of all clubs. We have a meeting next week, already previously scheduled. We certainly have some new agenda items now.
And
I'd say here are a couple. One takeaway is what I told you. We as a league, I want us communicating with granularity on specifics of what we're looking at, so people aren't just like, wondering what is the policy? What is going on? So I think that's an immediate takeaway for us. But I think we need to also look at if a game was scheduled in prime time locally, then how late is it? How late can we go before we call it? I think we should, that could be very different than if a game was scheduled at 1 p.m. local on a Saturday. Because then I think, how do we communicate in that situation? And what are our options? I think re-entry there's a lot of talk about the fans who had to stay in the stadium. And I think we've got to figure out what is the right call for a re-entry situation. You know, I can tell you, one of the main jobs of the league is we want to keep our fans safe. And so from a security standpoint, it's not as easy as it sounds as to just, let everyone leave and come back in. There are a lot of security components to that. So let's work on that as well. So I think that, communication, timing before a cancellation, possible reentry rules, all of those are places we're going to go with discussion.
There was some discussion that, for the players and player safety, how could you ask a player to kick off at 11:15 and end a game at about 2 a.m.? How much will that be have to be put in place on a, what is the latest we can go for player safety?
I'm happy to have that conversation with the players' union. That wasn't raised really as a significant piece to this. We knew the players wanted to stay safe and play in the proper air quality, but they wanted to play. And I don't know if that was a significant thought process. I think they were just ready to play. Let me get warmed up and let me go. I don't know what the specifics might be in terms of playing at midnight and what that does from a player safety standpoint. I don't know what the answer is to that.
What would you say to the fans? There were those who were there at about 6:30 and were there right until 10:45 when they called it.
The first thing I want to say is thank you for your passion for the league. Thank you for your patience during a very difficult time. And thank you for being safe and riding that out with us as we handled an unprecedented situation. We're incredibly grateful for our fans what they showed was just that they're an incredible group. And my commitment is to make sure that we are communicating as specifically as possible going forward.
That is Stuart Johnston, the commissioner of the Canadian Football League. So more protocols need to be coming in meetings with the Canadian Football League. And, can I just get one? I saw this, I don't know how many times. It felt like hundreds. Why was it okay for the cheerleaders to be out there with the smoke and not the players? So the cheerleaders don't have a collective bargaining agreement with the Canadian Football League that dictates what the air quality needs to be in order for them to perform a cheerleading routine on the field.
But someone needs to protect the cheerleaders.
The players do. They have it in the CBA and a policy in place about what they will play in.
The better question is, who's looking out for the cheerleaders? That's the better question, ladies and gentlemen.
If the cheerleaders didn't feel it was healthy enough for them to be out there, that's up to their coaches and themselves to go, no, I don't think that's good.
But time to start players, thinking about the cheerleaders.
And thus begins the push for...
I want to read Spence's text.
No, the CFL...
Let me read Spence's text.
CA, the CFL Cheerleaders Association.
Listen, I know you're a little snappy today because you spent a lot of time working that you...
No, because you believing... Locker believes that 20,000 people at Mosaic Stadium...
Had an adverse impact on the smoke clearing.
The wind stopped.
Yep, that's a big part of it as well. But read Spence's text then.
All Spence said...
You are actually quite correct.
The phenomenon that you're referring to the stadium crowd is comparable,
yep,
to the meteorological phenomenon called urban heat island, which happens during the winter, though. which happens during the winter.
But that many people was working against the smoke clearing out. I didn't say it was the only reason. I'm saying it played a part in it, and that what I was thinking that on Friday.
Ken in Saskatoon. Strange that kids could be in a ball tournament in Regina and play, but the big boys can't play football. Again, do the 10-year-olds have a policy in place in order to dictate what they can play at? No. That is up to the tournament organizer for them to believe that in the bargaining between the league and the players.
Okay, and I will say this, and whatever you want to believe, whether they should or should not have played based on what you saw on Friday, I was in the building for 3+ hours, wandering around, sitting in my seat, drinking Pilsner, and I woke up on Saturday eating mini donuts. Man, the guy that's selling mini donuts, that guy made a killing on Friday. And I woke up Saturday morning, and I could feel it. There was an impact on my ability to breathe the next day. It reminded me of, you know, you have like a, when you smoked, did you ever smoke?
Nope.
Okay. I would have a half pack day. And then there were some days I had a pack day. And it felt like I had a pack day on Saturday morning.
1-877-332-8255. Did the league and the Riders eventually get it right? But coming up next, a day in CFL history and a record that will never be broken. I'll put it on the board. It was on this day. We'll talk about it next on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
Pepperidge Farm remembers.
On this day in sports history, 1994, July 14th.
Here's Dunnigan. He wants Jackson long. Down the right side, Jackson. Oh, touchdown!
And he's going long for Mr. Jackson. He's got it. He's at the 30. Kiss him goodbye. Touchdown, Blue Bombers.
He'll throw it to David Williams in the end zone. Touchdown!
Matt Dunnigan throws for 713 yards against the Edmonton Eskimos in a 50-35 win. Still the record. Danny Barrett had set the record a year earlier in 93 at 603 yards. That's still number two. 110 yards more. Matt Dunnigan, 713 passing yards in a single game. I think it's fair to say, unless there's rule changes, will forever be the most a quarterback throws for in CFL history.